Those cheers are for Crystal Warren, a singer Sarah Bradshaw describes like this.
She's a soul-laden goddess. It's all soul, it's all heart, and you can feel it. She doesn't hold anything back. She's amazing.
It was the end of the night at Middle of the Map Fest, and a crowd made up of longtime fans filled the room at Californo's. And those not there?
They missed a revival.
A revival among the Kansas City faithful, that is, Crystal Warren, a Kansas City native and graduate of the Paseo Academy class of 2000, moved to Paris a few years ago, and she may not be a big name throughout the U.S., not yet anyway, but in 2012, The Guardian, a major international newspaper in the United Kingdom, compared her to Nina Simone and predicted that her upcoming album was sure to be one of the best of the year, period. Crystal's back in town for a visit, and we've managed to steal an hour of her time to hear her story. She'll even be performing a sneak preview of an unreleased song live for us in the studio later in the show. I'm Gina Kaufman, and Crystal Warren is the subject of today's portrait session on KCUR's Central Standard. Hi, Crystal.
Hi, Gina.
How's your trip been so far?
Action-packed, but really, really fantastic. I love being home.
When you come back to Kansas City, what are some things you have to do? Like, it would not be a trip back home if you did not do these things.
I have to eat at least 15 to 20 different restaurants, locations. There's a lot of comfort food in this town, so I seek it out as soon as I land.
When you lived in Kansas City, did you ever imagine earning comparison to someone like Nina Simone from a major international newspaper?
No, never. I couldn't have imagined really any comparison being drawn to what it is that I do. So it's always a nice, pleasant surprise, especially with Nina. It's huge.
Well, we're going to hear about your childhood in Kansas City, your experiences as an expatriate in Paris, and what drives you creatively. But I almost don't think it's fair to our listeners to say too much more without letting them hear your music. You've got a new album, but let's start with a song from your 2008 album, Circles. I picked this one quite honestly because it's got a shout out to Gates Barbecue. Anything you want to say about To the Middle before we play it?
It's a love song to Kansas City.
Okay, well, we've got an hour together, so what do you say we let this one breathe?
There we go.
This is Crystal Warren and the Faculty with To the Middle.
All these chances given you, you take the last and you fly, 'cause you need a different view. By and by you'll find the time, you'll gather up a well to cry. A struggling artist you are, glamorize your struggle is. It was a cheaper one here by far. He's a sword from up my wood. Thought about that beast. Why you wanna go away again? Oh, 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 why you wanna go away again? Maybe it by the boulevard and Gates Barbecue. So you come back to the middle with a hunger for an open door to these smiling tree-lined avenues. You wanna go away, why you wanna again? I'm asking, oh.
Crystal, when this is your love song to Kansas City, when you sing about going away again and a hunger for an open door and tree-lined boulevards, I actually, although the shout-out to Gates was a hint, I was still not totally sure whether you were talking about a longing for Kansas City or Paris, because so many of those descriptions, especially a tree-lined boulevard, could really be either one.
at the time that I wrote that when I was living in New York, and I'd come to KC maybe for a performance opportunity. I can't remember really the circumstances, but it occurred to me how much I missed home. You know, I missed my hometown, and it felt like Kansas City was kind of scolding me for leaving. In a certain aspect, you know.
Were the people here scolding you for leaving?
No, not so much. It was really, you know, I suppose just kind of me internalizing this this knowledge and knowing that I didn't really belong to New York, that it was just this kind of passing experience, and that my heart was really here. And I suppose I was being scolded by the lack of having Boulevard Wheat in New York and gates and space and trees. And one quick note about that tune as well that I have to mention is that Brad Cox did the arrangement for that.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
He's a local composer.
Yes.
When you moved to New York and had been working with all these Kansas City musicians, you continued to work with them sometimes?
Oh, absolutely. Brad Cox is my spirit animal. So wherever I go, I need him there, and and he did the string and horn arrangements on Circles and on the following release, Love Songs.
So I want to talk about the childhood in Kansas City and the upbringing here, because to understand better your connection to this place. You grew up on Kansas City's South Side, right?
Yes.
In what time period?
From when I was about 4 years old up until I was 15.
What was that? I mean, can you tell me a little bit about what your upbringing in that particular place was like?
You know, I guess in hindsight, it was somewhat suburban. There's something about the South Side of KC that feels really removed from any sort of activity, you know.
So like I remember, kind of sleepiness?
Yeah, there's a sleepiness there. You know, there's a lot of bike riding and climbing trees, that sort of thing.
Awesome childhood stuff.
You know, more or less, yeah.
What's the hesitation?
Well, I remember falling out of some trees, you know. But yeah, I had a really nice time, yeah.
When and how did music enter the picture?
It was always there. I grew up in the Southern Baptist tradition, you know. My mother's only brother is a pastor of a church in Spencer, Oklahoma, you know. So I was really brought up with a lot of gospel music in the house, and my mother loves Anita Baker and, you know, Will Downing. So I can remember as a kid just really singing along to those songs and emulating the vocalist of those recordings, you know.
Do you remember having a great ease at emulating them, or was it something that you kind of struggled to do? Because to hear your voice now, it sounds so natural, but I know that often that's deceptive, that people have worked very hard to hone those kinds of skills.
I think that I'm definitely at a point in my life where I sound more like me than I ever have. At the time that I was, you know, let's say in my teens, you know, religiously listening to Jeff Buckley, there were Buckleyisms that would slip out because it was suddenly so ingrained in me. But no, I do think that I do have a gift for mimicry. So it especially when it comes to Stevie, it's in the nasal, you know. So I was listening to a lot of Stevie as a kid.
Can you do a quick emulation for us now,
or is it too early?
Too early in the morning. So tell me about your first guitar.
My very first guitar was given to me by my friend Tiana Taylor. It was she's a class schoolmate of mine. We've known each other since we were 10 years old. And it was one of those rinky-dinky, you know, maybe it was a $10 guitar with a bird on the pickguard. and then from there I graduated to getting a Fender Squire at a pawn shop.
What did you do with it? Do you remember your first sort of fumbling interaction? I assume fumbling, but maybe that's not fair.
Those
first interactions.
Absolutely fumbling.
With this instrument that initially is awkward to hold and work
with. Oh, yeah. Yeah. I was clueless. I didn't know what to do with that thing. And it took me maybe a year or two to figure out how to tune it. So wherever it was tune-wise, I would just strum stuff. Which, in hindsight, I think was pretty good. It helped me get familiar with it.
What was driving you to push through those early stages where you weren't yet the musician you are now? You were just this, you know, a girl in a room with a guitar trying to figure it out.
That's a really good question. I just have such a passion for music. I don't know. It didn't seem like a chore. You know, I never felt that there was a deadline for me to figure it out, you know.
What was the first song you wrote?
The first song I ever wrote is called, I believe it's called Now I Know. I think I wrote it when I was 17 or 18.
Can you tell us about it?
I know that it was written leading up to New Year's, whatever year that was. I struggle to remember what year that was, but I remember that it had this tone of kind of reckoning with where I was at that time, and it had aspirations in it of gaining knowledge of. It was pretty heavy, I think, for a 17-year-old.
Yeah, know. Where do you think you were at that time? Like, when you were trying to, what were you trying to reckon with?
At that time, I was within state custody. I left home when I was 15 and emancipated myself. And I think that it was a time in my life where there was a great deal of uncertainty. I didn't really know what was going to be. Period. So, yeah, I think that music at that time really brought me through.
Being in state custody, and I just want to acknowledge, like, you've expressed that you don't want to talk about why that was, and
sure.
I'm totally going to respect that. What was the feeling like once that was happening? I mean, was it what you expected? You talk about emancipating yourself. Did it feel like freedom?
Yes and no. Actually, emancipating yourself, like being in front of a judge and being quite young and holding strong to your decision to go forward with it, at the same time you feel, well, you grew up faster, you know, and...
What is that process, I mean?
How did my age accelerate in some ways?
Well, yeah. What is the process? You talk about standing in front of a judge. I guess I've really never thought about what that process is. And
it's essentially you're presenting a case, depending on the circumstance, and it's reviewed. And if they see cause to bring it to a judge, then it moves forward. And the emotional process of it is something that I don't think that anyone's really prepared for.
Can you talk about that?
It's a divorce, you know, whether it's marital or, you know, between family members, you know, it's severing a tie. And that's not terribly easy, but oftentimes it's necessary.
So where did you go to live after this whole process, after the legal process anyway, had concluded?
For a brief amount of time, I lived with my older sister. And
where in town was that?
Southside KC as well. I ended up living within foster care. And then from that point, I was moved to an independent living program.
And so as far as just what that what that entails, especially the independent living program. How old were you? I mean, when you say independent living, that means you were essentially just a person living on your own, or no?
Not quite. I was in a program called Pathways, which is located here in Midtown KC. And the guidebook to that is they accept, well, first they look over your files, and if they think that you're a good fit, they bring you into this program, and then they place you in a flat. And at that time, I was at 44th and Jarbo.
And you're how old again at this time?
I think I was 17, 18, possibly 18. Yeah, that makes sense.
And you were on Jarbo?
Yeah, I was on Jarbo.
So you had come from South Kansas City to Midtown.
Yes.
Did you feel like you were encountering a different Kansas City?
Absolutely. I remember thinking, what is this magical place?
I think a lot of people think that when they first encounter Midtown as teenagers.
Yeah. It seemed like I had kind of found my people. There were and are a great deal of artists around there, and there's this electricity to Roanoke, to Midtown, Westport at that time.
And you were you went to Paseo Academy, is that right?
Yes.
Talk to me about that environment and how it shaped you either musically or personally to be at Paseo.
When I think about Paseo, I think about how free-flowing it was. And oddly enough, at that time, that was when the reins were being pulled. Suddenly, you know, there was ROTC. There was this presence of ROTC and kind of the thing that all the artsy kids had been trying to escape from other schools, you know. But I remember having amazing teachers. Specifically Leanne Horn, who was my English teacher.
What was so great about her?
She believed in me. She knew my personal story, where I was coming from, and really just became a mother for me. They looked out for me. There was also Joel Coughlin, who was not a father figure, but who is an interesting character to know. I suppose the thing that I really remember most about my time in Paseo was how I felt a touch of freedom. You know,
was that about the school itself, or the people you were meeting, or
a bit of both? I felt that I was beginning to become myself, you know, that I had this room to grow.
Can you be a little bit more specific about what becoming yourself meant to you? Because everyone can relate to that feeling, but it means something different specifically to each of us.
For me, it was a growing confidence in, you know, something as minute as my appearance, my sense of style, you know, because so much of schooling is conforming, you know, and I felt that in any other environment I could have been perceived as, you know, the strange, weird, quiet kid, and there I was really kind of celebrated for, you know, being a singer, being a musician, being different.
Can you describe your sense of style? Because you referenced it, and our listeners can't see you.
my dear friend Gwyneth Herbert, who's an amazing musician based in the UK, she calls me a dandy. So if that gives any image out there to the listeners, there you have it.
Sort of, you're today in a button-down shirt with a sweater vest.
Yeah.
And you are a slight, slender person with glasses and understated earrings, no other jewelry that I can decipher.
Plain Jane meets Oscar Wilde.
Oh, and I want to get into your relationship with writers later, because you have on your most recent album set music to a poem by William Blake. But we'll get to that. You know, touching on your upbringing just a little bit more, I've heard you say that you were shy when you started performing, and you just referred to yourself as like this kid who could be perceived as quiet. And, you know, you are now Crystal Warren. You've toured with people like Rufus Wainwright. You're not playing little gigs in hole-in-the-wall venues predominantly. How did the shy girl and if I understand correctly, a church choir become someone with a confidence to perform at that level?
What ended up shifting everything for me, what I thought about performance, what I thought about songwriting, presentation, all of that, happened when I saw Loudon Wainwright III in Chicago, 2002, 2003. And I believe he played for something like 2 hours, but the time flew. And he has this way of just commanding you know, you're full of tension. And I remember, you know, being brought to tears listening to songs about, and you know, the Wainwrights like to put their stuff on Front Street, as fans of theirs know. So there's a lot of their personal turmoil that comes out in the music, and you know, tears are shed, and then the next moment he would end up making you cry with laughter. And I remember thinking, that's how it's supposed to be done, you know. As a singer-songwriter, it shouldn't just be this woe is me thing. We should actually be ourselves and celebrating the humor of life as well.
Well, we're going to get right back to this conversation with Crystal Warren. We're going to move on to her accidental move to Paris and hear about how her music career has changed since then. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stay tuned for this portrait session on KCUR's Central Standard with Crystal Warren. Welcome back to KCUR's Central Standard. I'm Gina Kaufman. Our guest today is acclaimed singer-songwriter Crystal Warren. She lives outside of Paris now, but she grew up in Kansas City and got her start here. She's only been in Paris a few years, but her music has really been taking off ever since. Hi again, Crystal.
Hi.
So what brought you to Paris?
I signed with a French music label by the name of Because Music. They are the ones that released Circles.
Circles, and that was your 2008 album. We heard a song from it just a little while ago.
Yes.
So I am getting the impression that you did not intend to stay in Paris.
No, that was that was never my intention.
Can you tell the story of what happened?
Well, I ended up getting hitched. I've become an honest woman. I was brought over and did a string of promo and things of that sort, and I just don't think that they had any intention of ever sending me back. And now 8 years later, it's my other home.
Yeah. Well, I want to hear some more of your music, but let's hear that story in a little more detail, because when you said you got hitched, that was not entirely an untrue part of the story.
Sure. Are you asking like how?
Yeah, tell the story.
Hitched? Okay.
Well, tell the story and what that has to do with your staying. I mean, obviously that keeps a person in a place, but
sure. Well,
but we want more details.
Okay. So before we had met, I was intending to come back to the States. I was feeling pretty alone, actually. You fall into another culture, you know, that's not your own. You're miles and miles away from friends and family. The plan was to come back to the States, but before coming
back
to the States...
Can I pause you there and just
sure.
ask, what were some of the most disorienting aspects of this other culture you were experiencing in France?
They're not cuddly.
They are not cuddly,
They're
I would
not
agree.
They're cuddly people, you know. Actually, just yesterday, while walking down the street, an older gentleman was sitting in his driveway, and he said, "Good afternoon." And I smiled and said, "Good afternoon." And I was just thinking, gosh, I love my town, you know, like just something as simple as that. And there, that doesn't really happen, you know, so And I also wasn't very pleased with the relationship that I was having with my record label either. So I felt really, really removed.
Maybe them not getting you a return ticket had something to do with it.
Something to do with that, yeah, amongst other things. But yeah, so just prior to making the move back to the States, I went to check out a Rufus Wainwright concert. I was going to be joining him about a month later in a tribute to his mother, which was taking place at London's Meltdown Festival. So I go to the concert, and during the intermission, I end up meeting Van, who is now my better half. And, well, the rest is history.
No,
I'm missing something?
Still want more details on this. I mean, you see a person, and that is not the
okay.
rest is history.
All right, sorry. There, yeah, okay. What had happened was I go in to find my seat, and I ended up spotting this amazing French actress by the name of Isabelle Huppert, who's a stunner. And as I'm thinking, oh, my God, that's Isabelle Huppert, Van sees me and she goes, oh, my God, that's Crystal Warren. And her uncle said, who? I particularly like that she had mentioned what her uncle had said, because it's grounding, you know. So yeah, during the intermission, she had walked up to me and she said, excuse me, are you Crystal Warren? I said, yes. And I actually recognized her. She's a teacher. And she had contacted me through social media. Her students wanted to do like this biography on me in their class, and so she had contacted me to know if I could give any tidbits for them to use in their project. So I recognized her as well, and invited her and her uncle out for drinks after the Rufus performance. And somewhere in the midst of all of that, it was, you know, I have to see her again.
I've heard a rumor that barbecue did play into this courtship
yes.
as well.
So the three of us share a cab, and you know, we drop off her uncle, and as the cab is about to drop her, I said, listen, I'm having a barbecue on Friday, if you'd be interested in coming, and you know, feel free to bring your uncle. And she said, yeah, I'd love to. So she hops out, and then I immediately get into my phone and all of my contacts, text them and said, you know, hey, will you please come to my place on Friday? Because I'm going to throw a party. I need to have you there. Yeah, I need to have a barbecue.
do Parisians like have a full grasp of what it means to have a barbecue?
Now they do. You know, I have made many an addict of gate sauce. And every time they know that I'm coming here, when I come back, I get these calls, these random calls of, hey, have you got the sauce? So,
well, so you have a new album, and it's really a monumental project. It's a two-parter, and it's all love songs. It's mm-hmm. Can you talk a little bit about what you were going for with this project?
With love songs, which we have since pressed as vinyl, and are waiting and waiting and waiting to have our vinyl copies. The idea of love songs came about while we were still recording our first album, Circles. There was just a large body of work, and I figured that if I were to pick and choose wisely, I could create a narrative where we would experience the early stages of a relationship, and, you know, like a good French film, the downfall of said relationship. And I felt the only way to go about it production-wise, as I was producing that record, was to do it completely live. So we enlisted about 27 musicians, and, you know, like the sessions that Aretha had at Atlantic. And
why did it need to be live?
It needed to be live because there's a certain magic, or as Prince would say, or did say, the joy in repetition.
May he rest in Paisley.
You know? the more we would play through it, the more magic would come into play. I mean,
and does that relates to love in an important way, or it relates to music in an important way?
For me, it related to music. You know, these days it's all about quantizing and cutting and pasting and just so much manipulation. And I wanted to make an artistic statement that, you know, contrary to popular belief, there is still this way of creating music, of recording music.
There are a lot of different sounds sort of encapsulated in this album, so I want to play a few clips from it. We're going to go from one to another. We're not going to hear a whole song so that we can just get a taste of that breath.
I won't take it personally.
But let's go ahead and hear a little bit of Forever is a Long Time, one of the songs from this Love Songs double album. Crystal, tell me what this song captures. I mean, forever is a long time. That title could certainly be taken a lot of ways in the context of a relationship.
For me, that song encapsulates the innocence of falling.
There's also, I mean, it could be heard with like a, oh my God, that's a long time.
There's a bit of that too. There's innocence and fear, which I think go hand in hand when attraction is turning into actual feelings, and there's the fear of, as the lyric is, you know, never go away, I don't want to lose this. There's the fear of losing yourself. All of these things come up.
Well, I want to hear another song from this album. It's actually a love poem by William Blake. Mm. Are you into poetry?
Yes. I wouldn't say that I'm a specialist in the world of poetry, but I certainly appreciate it.
What was it about this poem that made you want to put it to music?
I had written the music first, funny enough, and I was given William Blake's Songs of Experience as a birthday gift, and well, Songs of Innocence and Experience, I got both, and as I was reading that poem, I realized that it fit in perfectly with the music that I'd written.
Well, let's hear a little bit of The Clod and the Pebble by Crystal Warren.
Love seeketh not itself to please, nor for itself hath any care, but for another gives its ease. Builds a heaven and builds a heaven in hell's despair. Love seeketh.
Crystal, your vocal range is incredible, and that's part of what people can hear on that song. I mean, your voice dives so low, but so gradually and so naturally. How did you either develop that or just recognize it in yourself?
I think it's a bit of age and maybe a touch of hard living.
How does hard living play into it?
Well, I am a naughty smoker. There, I've admitted it. Aunt Loretta, Aunt Mamie, Mom, Samara, it's out there now.
In your hometown.
And also I don't know. I won't even really get into that, actually. We can discuss that off air. But
the rest of the hard living.
Other ideas of having a bit of a wide spectrum vocally. But I do think that I personally appreciate having that register there. I listen to mostly male singers. And that could be part of it too, actually, with listening to so much of Kurt Elling and emulating what he was doing. It's nice to just stretch out the chords, the vocal chords, that is.
There's something else that I'm curious about just in terms of your musical relationship specifically to France. I mean, as an expatriate musician in France, there is kind of a tradition of African American musicians pursuing their careers abroad, in France in particular. Do you see yourself as part of that tradition?
Yes, I do. But for different reasons. You know, I don't feel that, obviously I'm not denied a seat on the bus, you know, as so many of those jazz musicians were. However, I do think that just as they experienced, I too have found a bit of room, a bit of artistic freedom there to do what I want to do.
What's different about the freedom there than what you might have felt in Kansas City or in New York?
Primarily, I'm not subjected to so much of Virgin Radio, the pop music of today that follows you into the grocery store and into the elevator. You know, I have peace and quiet, and I don't feel that I'm competing in any way with Lady Gaga.
Crystal Warren, stay with me through one more break. We'll get back to this portrait session and a live studio performance in just a minute. We'll hear a little bit more from Crystal's new album as well. I'm Gina Kaufman. Stay tuned for more Central Standard on KCUR. I'm Gina Kaufman, and today's Central Standard on KCUR is a portrait session with singer-songwriter Crystal Warren. She's gained international notoriety, but in Kansas City, we can say we knew her when. And Crystal, we always, when we do these portrait sessions, we arrange for photographs to be taken with the talented Paul Andrews, and you've requested that your photographic portrait be taken on the front porch of your eighth grade teacher's home.
Yes.
Talk to me about that
place.
Yes.
Alice Stein, if you're listening, hello. In fact, I know you're listening. She's one of my favorite people. I've known her, you know, since I was 13, and she's a confidant and a mom and a dear friend, and her home is really a safe haven for me. So it's a very special spot, and when your producer Jin had asked for me to think about a location, and she specifically used the word meaningful, that was the first place that came to mind.
Is there a detail about that porch that when you're far away in your home outside of Paris, that like if you were to conjure up this place, this is the part about it that really matters?
When I think about the porch, I think of Alice sitting on it. I can just have an image of her sitting out there and watching the hummingbirds go to the feeder, and because she's a nature lover. So that's usually the image that comes to mind when I think of the porch, just her sitting out there.
We've heard about the story of you going into state custody as a teenager. In eighth grade, this would have been before that. Can you talk to me about this relationship just a little bit more?
With Alice?
Yeah.
That's a funny question. Yes, you were right. It was just prior to me being in state custody, and she was a great support to me at that time. I think that's all I'm comfortable at saying at this time.
Well, let's get back to music. You know, I want to hear another song from your most recent album, the Love Songs album. I know that lyrics are only one piece of the puzzle with any song, that a song is a lot more than that. But in Sunbeams, I detect perhaps some reflection on your career. Maybe I'm wrong about that.
Mm.
And how far you've traveled, both geographically and in life. Maybe even some ambivalence. But since these are love songs, I suspect it's probably not about music so much.
Well, it's funny that you say that. Sunbeams was written when I was still living in KC in my early 20s. But I never questioned why did I decide to record it so many years later. So maybe on some level, subconsciously, I was thinking about, you know, my career or whatnot. To me, though, that song is just—it feels like an old fable of some sort, like an English folk song that keeps rolling. And
folk music would not be the connection I would draw sonically
with that
song,
for sure.
Let's go ahead and hear Sunbeams, and then we'll talk a little more.
Facing the rolling tide, my mind ventured off to another plane. Beauty, game, and shapes and things, hopes and dreams and sunbeams. Why on earth I left that rock? What a foolish thing to do.
So, what is the rock?
What do you think the rock is?
Well, I had thought, because I foolishly assumed you had written the song recently, that the rock might be Kansas City and like an early career sort of, I don't know, I'm probably reading
like
into
that.
This based on my own experience, just that early stage where you still don't know what you're doing and you spend a lot of time contemplating and can't quite catapult into action.
I really dig that interpretation.
Well, thanks.
We should keep that. I don't really know what the tune is about. It feels very folkloric to me. I'm guessing that the protagonist is searching, is trying to let the, I don't know. There's so much imagery going on in there with sunbeams and whatnot. It sounds like there's a journey going on.
There's this sitting and thinking and then sort of regretting getting up from that spot.
Mm. Mm. Isn't that a nice little twist?
Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I don't know. I don't know, Gina.
Well, so you're going to do a live song for us before we go, but I want to ask you first about currently your biggest creative challenges and inspirations. I mean, is there some question or pursuit that's really got you activated right now? I want to know what you're obsessed with at the moment.
Well, at the moment, I just finished recording a new album, and it was a huge challenge for many, many reasons. I should preface that by saying that I love challenges. If there isn't a challenge involved, then I'm not interested. But while writing, I was also getting behind a drum kit, you know, and I bought a bass, and I decided that I wanted to basically pull a Paul McCartney and make a McCartney, or, you know.
Wait, what do you mean by pull a Paul McCartney?
His very first solo recording, McCartney, he's playing all the instruments, and it's my favorite album of his. And I think that there's something very, very courageous and personal in going about it that way. So I made the decision to to make a record where I was behind each instrument, and got together with my buddy Ben Kane, who was co-producing it with me, and who's done quite well for himself. He won a Grammy for the D'Angelo album, so, you know, good job, Kane. But yeah, so we got into the studio, and the subject matter of the songs, it's this social, political, questioning faith recording that I didn't really see coming by miles. So yeah, that's my latest challenge.
So when this show originally aired back in May, Crystal performed a then unreleased song, Thanks and Praise, live in the studio. For technical reasons, we aren't able to share that rendition, but we'll go out on that same song, a live recording and all.
Been some time since I said to thee how I love thee, how I'm grateful. Here I am, I've come to praise thee for your certainty. Where I was doubtful, yeah, this world of rising waters, so heavy, so dark, so deep, comfort is found in what you mean to me. I was wandering, came so far to be all alone. And you found me, and you tell me it's gonna be all right. Took me in your arms where I found home. Yeah, I found home. Ooh. In this world dark and deep, comfort is found in what you mean to me. Bless this little lamb now at your feet.
That's Crystal Warren's Thanks and Praise, recorded from a live performance she did in August of 2015. Since we met with Crystal, she has released that album. It's called Love Songs, and you can find it on her website. Time is up for today's Central Standard here on KCUR. This has been an encore broadcast of our portrait session with Crystal Warren. Thanks for joining us. You can listen back to this episode and others at kcur.org/centralstandard. KCUR's Central Standard is produced by Matthew Long Middleton, Sylvia Maria Gross, Jen Chen, Andrea Tudhope, and Suzanne Hogan. I'm Gina Kaufman, and that's a wrap. Happy New Year, everyone.